Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Richard in York says, I should have heeded the advice of Mr. Kermode. Hello, by the way.
Hello.
The New World was one of the worst movies in quite a while. Lots of nature shots, lots of running and walking through fields and forests, lots of facial close-ups, lots of decaying gnashers, apart from Colin Farrell. Not a lot of dialogue and lots of rubbish. On a happier note, Walk the Line was the best cinematic experience of the year so far. It rocked.
It doesn't it just? I know people are making an awful lot of the fact that Johnny Cash's daughter doesn't like the film, but in fact, in an interview that I read with her, she said that she thought it was done honourably. She just wished they hadn't done it. And it sounded to me like, you know, there was unresolved personal issues rather than an attack on the film itself. It's
Aid says, Simon, perhaps Mark might enjoy this Name the Movie challenge.
Are we still doing that?
Well, Aid is. He's suggesting it.
Okay.
I'm nobody, I'm somebody, I love my sledge.
Oh, well, Citizen Kane?
Yes.
But then that's like, now we're going to get told off for giving away the ending. But as we always like to do, you know, Sixth Sense, he's a ghost.
It's not exactly.
Crying Game.
It's not exactly.
She's a guy.
It's not a
Citizen Kane, it's a sledge, okay?
Davey says, France, nudity, lake, zombies, Nazi zombies.
Zombie Lake?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Anyway, listen, we're starting all this early because the Prime Minister's going to make a few points, probably about the Dunfermline by-election, probably about just life in general.
But could you send one of those to them? Can somebody stand up in Parliament and say, Prime Minister, France, nudity, zombies, well, name that film.
He's slightly annoyed that he's going to miss the review, so he's checking out the podcast later. Let's do the box office top 10, and then what will happen is the Prime Minister is due around about 3 o'clock. And we'll bring you him, or we'll bring you some John Peanut, and then we'll be back with plenty more movie conversation. Number 10, Underworld, Evolution.
Rubbish. Going out the charts quickly.
The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Two colons in the first two movies.
It has really hung on in there, though, hasn't it? I mean, it does show the kids do love it. I mean, my kids enjoyed it very much, and it is charming for the younger viewers. It doesn't satisfy, I think, for the older viewers. It'd be very interesting to see where they're going to go now with the other books, because the other books are a lot more challenging.
Memoirs of a Geisha at 8.
A big, romping Hollywood costume drama that people have mistaken for a piece of Japanese stroke Chinese stroke Asian politicising. It's none of those things. It's a Hollywood movie. It happens to have actually a very good performance by Ziyi Zhang, as she's now calling herself, as opposed to Zhang Ziyi. And it's worth seeing in the same way that Chicago wasn't.
Rumour has it at number 7.
What is it with Jennifer Aniston? Does she have a good movie in her? No.
Brokeback Mountain at 6.
Somebody sent an email. It's from James in Barnstable. Third attempt. What does Mark think of Brokeback Mountain? We still don't know on each top 10 listing. It's never really been said. I can't tell whether the tone of that's ironic. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was absolutely terrific. You were slightly bored by it.
No, I wasn't slightly bored with it. I thought it was about 20 minutes too long. Which doesn't mean I was bored by it.
No.
I thought they were fantastic.
But I think I've embraced it more than you have.
But you can tell it's a 50-page novel.
A 30-page novella, I think, is a short story, isn't it?
Derailed at 5.
Again, I refer the jury to the previous question about Jennifer Aniston and her fabulous screen career.
Is she in Munich?
No, she's not. Although, funnily enough, that actually would have worked out quite well if we had a moment for Jennifer Aniston. I can't believe that it's been nominated Best Film. I can't believe that Spielberg has been nominated Best Director. I know everybody feels like they're walking on coals with the issues, but it's so worthy, so balanced, so even-handed as to be slightly turgid. You know what, Stephen? Every now and then, it's nice for a filmmaker to be a little bit un-PC. And I just felt like it was just too balanced.
Munich's at 4. So number 3, Fun with Dick and Jane.
Dick and Jane, present and correct. Fun, missing, without leave or whatever it is. Absent without leave.
Walk the Line is number 2.
As previously discussed, an absolutely wonderful film. And there was a Johnny Cash impersonator was talking in one of the newspapers about having seen the film and having watched Joaquin Phoenix's performance. It was quite right, saying when you get the stance right and you get the attitude right, there's an awful lot of things which you can get away with just because you look like the right person. And he said that that Joaquin Phoenix had the guitar stance, the thing about reeling away from the microphone and lifting his chin up and coming back to the microphone like he was about to, and he was perfectly right. It's a terrific movie. I predict an Oscar for Reese Witherspoon, although I think that Joaquin Phoenix is going to get pipped at the post by the godlike Philip Seymour Hoffman for Capote.
And the UK's number one movie, Zathura, a space adventure.
Yeah, basically, you see Jumanji.
Yeah.
You know, they play the ball game and all the things come out of the jungle.
It's that again.
It's that. It's in space. And it's directed by the guy who was out of Swingers. And it's rubbish, but it's perfectly fine rubbish. I mean, I don't actually like Jumanji very much, but I preferred Zathura just because I like space and I'm not that interested in jungles. And also, it doesn't have Robin Williams in it, which is always a good thing.
OK, so what's coming up then? We've done the box office top ten. We'll do more of your correspondence. We'll do the movie releases, Big Mama's House 2, Lady Vengeance, Chicken Little, Final Destination 3. What a daft title that is. I
mean,
it's either a Final Destination or
it isn't.
And Proof as well, which is the Gwyneth Paltrow movie that we were talking about on yesterday's programme. This says... we're expecting Tony Blair in about 10 minutes' time, something like that.
And when he comes on, it's... Do we have to get everything done before he comes? I'm just checking.
No.
Oh, no, fine.
No. We'll listen to him for a bit.
Have you had a word with him?
We'll listen to him for a bit, and then say, when we want to stop...
Oi, Tony!
We'll stop. James in Sheffield. Watching Newsnight Review last Friday, I saw the new stage production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, described by Mark as funny, stop. Is Mark now using Simon's quiz for his reviews?
Actually, it is definitely the case that I did that... You know, directly after us having done a show in which they say it has clearly got into my psyche, and that is what it is. Funny, stop.
Luke says, I watched Walk the Line last week, found it thoroughly entertaining, the music and acting fantastic. Whilst watching it, I couldn't help but notice the peculiar similarity between the heads of Joaquin Phoenix and our own Dr. Kermode, especially when in profile. They even have the same haircut. Anyway, here's one I came across.
That's very fine of you to say so.
Ask Mark to mull this one over. Uh-huh. Man loses rifle. Man sets out to get rifle back again. That's it.
Man loses rifle. Man sets out to get rifle back again.
Yeah. The clue is it's a remake of a Western. No, that's it.
No, I don't know.
Can't hang around.
What is it?
Winchester 73, originally a 1950 James Stewart movie.
Yeah. No, OK. I'm lousy on Westerns anyway. Philip French is the authority on that era. And, of course, Kim Newman.
Mayo, but they're not here and you
no,
are.
No, but so I'm just giving credit where it's due. There are some areas in which I'm not perfect. They're not many, but Westerns happen to be one of them. I just mention it in passing.
Before the Prime Minister, what can you offer us as a kind of a warm-up?
Proof. The new movie by John Madden, who was on the programme the other day.
And yesterday. It was very nice.
Absolutely lovely. Directed Shakespeare in Love, now directs whinging Gwyneth Paltrow in a film...
Whinging? She's depressed.
Yeah, well, believe me, she's not the only one. Adaptation of a stage play, a very stagey adaptation of a stage play, in which whinging Gwynny is a very sensitive, very troubled... genius daughter of a very sensitive, very troubled genius maths father, played by Anthony Hopkins. Are you allowed to say that?
Well, he dies. He says his first appearance right at the beginning of the film. He says, "You know, I am dead." So that kind of gives it away, as far as I was concerned.
All right. Well, I wasn't going to give that away as part of the plot, but now
it's in the first 2 minutes.
Simon's blown it.
It's in the first 2 minutes.
He's
it's hardly
dead.
A plot
She's
cliffhanger.
She's hallucinating him. Well, you don't know from the trailers that he's dead.
We're not reviewing the trailers.
Okay, fine. He's dead. She's the daughter. She's living in the house. She's haunted by the ghost of him. She's talking to him. She's not drinking the champagne because he's dead. And he's doing one of those Anthony Hopkins performances, which goes like that. And he does literally do that. So she's very troubled because she's living in this house because she's given up her whole life to look after her father. Now the only thing she has is the attentions of Jake Gyllenhaal, who plays a young and strangely good-looking maths genius who wants to go through Anthony Hopkins' books that he left behind, and Hope Davis, who is Gwynny's much more sprightly, much more successful, power suit-wearing sister, who wants to get Gwynny out of the house and, it turns out, into a nursing home. Have you ever heard of organic karaoke? What's the matter with the letter M? You know what it is? It's that performance is so smug and simpering, she can't even bring her mouth together to form the letter M.
Chemistry.
The word is chemistry. Miss Paltrow, who incidentally was recently in the paper complaining about the way that British people say basil and pasta. It should be basil and pasta. Well, it should be chemistry, all right, with an M in the middle of it.
You're not getting my Coldplay tickets for Monday.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine what fun they must have of an evening? So, the problems. Well, firstly, it's a fantastically clunky adaptation of a stage play, and I think that although Madden did a terrific job with Shakespeare in Love, which was really an unworthy best film winner, it's a perfectly fine film. I think that Paltrow's performance is the very high point of her irritatingness. She has done stuff in the past that was quite funny, and, I mean, she's prove that she's a very fine actress who has a range which is wider than the thing that she's now fallen into, which is wandering around going, give me an award. Look, I'm a math genius and I'm troubled. Oh, there's a hint of terrible masochism about this. Please give me an award. And, of course, she was duly rewarded with a nomination at the Golden Globes, which is completely silly. They just went, oh, it's Gwynnie. Look, she's suffering. We must give her an awards nomination. Jake Gyllenhaal as boy math genius down the street. I love Jake Gyllenhaal, but don't be silly. No, he does Donnie Darko. He's brilliant in Bareback Mountain, as we now
seen
officially
him. We have seen him now in a variety of sexual roles, have we not?
We have seen him in a variety of roles, sexual or not, but the fact is I don't buy him as boy whiz
We've
math
seen him
genius.
In all positions in the last just few weeks.
Yes.
That's enough. Stop.
And Sir Anthony Hopkins, as they now like to refer to him in America, as I believe he is now an American citizen, isn't he?
Yes.
He gave up his Welshness and became Sir Anthony Hopkins. Just acts in that I am an actor, I can do this, I can bumble over in this corner over here, I can walk over into this corner over here, and every now and then I can and so
your
the
impressions
combination
aren't great,
do you want me to do Gwyneth again doing
no,
chemistry?
Please don't.
Chemical. It's a chemical. It's like
no, I said they weren't great, which means do fewer.
Well, I was just doing it to annoy you. Because I had to watch Proof, okay? Here's a nice thing about Proof. It's got a good score. The score's really nice. The music is tinkly and sweet in a way which is perfectly fine. But I never saw the play, and people who saw the play tell me that it's very good. In that case, the translation of the play from stage to screen loses absolutely everything. Paltrow is just annoying. Hopkins is just Hopkins. Gyllenhaal is completely unbelievable. And you know what? I don't care about these people. I don't care about their problems. I don't care about their maths. I don't care about their proofs. I don't care whether they can prove that they love each other. I don't care about whether or not Jake and Gwynnie get it together or whether or not Gwynnie in the end comes. I just don't care. I'm just sitting there thinking, you know what I really want at the moment is somebody from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 to run in with a pig's head, brandishing home tools.
Stylistically, just, that would have been a problem.
It would have been very, very exciting, and it would have really, really put a rocket up the... There was a famous review of a film, and I can't remember what it was, and somebody said it was one of those ones in which you really wanted somebody to put a bomb under the plot. And you felt like this. It's like, come on. This is lazy. This is... You know all the quotes on the poster? Elegant, well-constructed, finely acted, an intelligent, thoughtful, heartrending, moving, and in the end, slight... You know, and it's like all those words that mean, you know what, I was bored, everyone else was bored, but I'm just not going to own up and say it. Well, sorry, I'm thick. It was boring.
I wasn't quite as bored as you, I have to say.
Did you like it?
I did quite enjoy it.
Did you? Which bit did you like?
I particularly...
Did you like the bit when she said chemistry?
I didn't even notice the bit that where she said chemistry.
Do you think it needed a little more basil in the mix before so they got the pasta out of the oven?
Sarah, on this email, my son is brilliant at maths. Is Proof going to depress me? If so, I will avoid it.
If your son is brilliant at maths and he goes to see...
It's got nothing to do with maths, actually.
No, it hasn't. The maths is just there to lend a veneer of intelligence to what is really a very navel-gazing noodle. I mean, apparently it was a great play. I don't know what difference they did between the play and the stage, other than they have not brought it to life. And apparently, Paltrow was great on stage. I mean, the theatre reviews were glowing. They said, oh, she's marvellous. It was up there with Nicole Kidman in The Blue Room. They all said, oh, absolutely fabulous. On screen, totally stinky.
And Sarah concludes, would you let a 10-year-old, by the way, go to see Fun with Dick and Jane? It's a 12A. We're on a party invite here.
No, I mean, I wouldn't let a 30-year-old go and see it. It's rubbish. It's not funny. It's not, you know, there are a million better things that you could do with your time. Go and
see. It's obviously a party. It's a load of 10-year-olds, maybe a birthday party.
Not Fun with Dick and Jane. It's not funny enough. It's just
walk,
not funny enough.
They can't Walk the Line. That's a 15.
They can go and see Zathura, a space adventure, which is perfectly fine.
Brokeback Mountain, they're probably not. Chronicles of Narnia.
Well, Chronicles of Narnia is very good if you're a certain age. Can I just say that I am shocked to hear that people have been taking 2- and 3-year-old children in to see King Kong. And somebody who I'm very close to went to see King Kong, and behind them was sat somebody with a 3-year-old child who apparently was going, I'm really scared, I want to go. And the mother was going, oh, don't be silly, it'll all be over in a moment. I mean, can I just remind everybody, the 12A certificate means 12, unless you have very good reason for believing that your child is up to it. As far as
like
the Fun with Dick and Jane...
babysitter.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a babysitting service. It's a film classification. Can we please take it seriously? Because if we don't, the BBFC will do what they were threatening to do before. They'll put a minimum age 8 limit on it, and everyone will have their wrists smacked, and rightly so, because frankly, at the moment, we, the public, are letting them, the censors, down. I never thought I'd say that.
Sarah concludes, keep talking, keep Tony off. Well, Tony apparently isn't turning up till 5:30 now, so it's sort of he's drifting. I think he's
just, listening.
He is listening.
He's listening. He said, "No, no, they haven't done Final Destination 3 yet."
We'll get what a stupid title.
No, it's not. It's the third part of the Final Destination.
Well, neither is or it isn't.
Well, it's no more stupid than the greatest album in the world ever, Volume 54. Which
Emma,
we're on to now.
Okay, here's one for you from Emma. I've got no idea. I can't actually get this. Dark, pastel, pastel, icy, pastel, dark.
Sorry, dark?
Dark, pastel, pastel, icy, pastel again, dark. I think it's very tricky.
Blue Velvet?
No, Edward Scissorhands. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, no, it does. I mean, it's fair enough. It begins dark, then we're in the outside of the thing, then the pastel is when you're in the village, and then it's a dark ending. Although, actually, to be honest, you should end with Fall of Snow. It doesn't end dark, because it ends with Winona Ryder dancing in the Fall of Snow. So I think on a technicality, that's not fair.
OK, well, I'll let you off that one. On the subject of Walk the Line,
yeah.
Did you notice the moment in the movie when it's actually Johnny Cash singing and not Joaquin Phoenix?
No. What, is there a moment when you listen on the radio or something?
The end credits.
Oh.
It's the only time that you actually get to hear Johnny Cash singing.
And what do they play over the end credits? Walk the Line?
I can't remember now.
OK.
But you suddenly realise, hang on, the voice has changed slightly and it's the real Johnny Cash and the real June Carter.
But, anyway. I have to say there were a number of moments when I was watching that film thinking, is that Joaquin Phoenix or is that Johnny Cash? I think he does a brilliant job.
Martin, imagine, I don't get it, guys, on this Walk the Line. The
really?
Guess the film teaser for this movie should go, country star isn't quite as interesting as I thought. What's the big deal? Yawn.
Well, it comes down to, it's a generic thing. If you like pop biopics, you realise that it's Citizen Kane. If you don't like pop biopics, then you probably wouldn't get it. And, of course, if you're not as clever as me, you probably wouldn't get it.
So very good of you. So, Proof, we've done. What else is out?
Final Destination 3. Now, obviously, Proof, marvellously, you know, crafted like a fine Welsh dresser. And Final Destination 3, total piece of schlock, which wasn't even press screened until the National Press Show, like 2 days before it opened, which is, you think, never a good thing. So, story is, you know, Final Destination 1. It's like throwback to these post-ironic slasher movies. When I grew up, there's a bunch of slasher movies in which guys chased people round lakes, you know, with kitchen implements. And then everyone got bored with it. And then there was the ironic or the postmodern slasher movie, which was Scream, in which a bunch of people got chased round with kitchen implements while saying, you know what?
With a raised eyebrow.
With a raised eyebrow. Very good. Then, very quickly, the eyebrow went back down again. And everyone said, you know, we just like the thing with the guy chasing them round the lake with the kitchen
ordinary
implements.
Eyebrows.
Exactly. So take them out of the irony. So then there was all that I don't care what you did last summer movies, which I don't care about. And Final Destination trilogy. First one, plane crash. Second one, freeway pile up. Third one, roller coaster disaster at the beginning. Basic plot setup is girl has, and if you've seen any of the other ones, you know how this is going to go. Girl has premonition before roller coaster ride, sees in her mind a disaster. I love roller coasters, incidentally. I'm a huge fan of roller coasters. Love Blackpool. Fantastic place.
Really interesting. Carry
just
on.
Telling you. So she has this premonition of this roller coaster disaster. She manages to get some of her friends off the roller coaster, but not all of them. And then the roller coaster goes off, and then there is a roller coaster disaster. That's the opening sequence. That's like the James Bond, the pre-credits sequence, if you want, 10 minutes. Then, for the rest of the movie, as with the other ones, death is coming to get the people who escaped death. This time, through a series of clues, which are in photographs, very much in the mode of stuff you've seen before, particularly this always reminds me of The Omen. That's the serious dialogue out of the way, because after that, it's just a series of incredibly mechanical ends. Now, the thing that I went in thinking was, I really can't be bothered with this third part in this series. I grew up with it. I went to see all those then X-rated movies when I was 14 and 15. And by the time I was actually old enough to see them, I really didn't want to ever go and see another silly X-rated slasher movie.
Does that undermine, by the way, your previous lecture about going in to see films with the wrong certificate? The fact that you did. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention
that's
it.
That's very good. Am I being a hypocrite?
Discuss. Send us a text.
Thank you. No, don't even bother. I know the answer is yes. No, but that's slightly different because I wasn't being my parent. I mean, my parents wouldn't have allowed me to do it. It's different. It's one thing, you know,
so you
doing it yourself.
Your parents as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably.
Review the film.
Okay. So I sat there thinking, I'm really not interested. And then the grungy stuff started happening. And all the grungy stuff is orchestrated. Like, do you remember that game Mousetrap?
Yes.
When there's a bucket and a boot, and the boot kicks
still
the bucket.
Got it, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
And the thing goes down the thing, and then it pushes something else, and the guy jumps into another bucket, and in the end,
pushes a marble.
Pushes a marble, and in the end, a washing basket falls down on a mouse. Well, that's what Final Destination 3 is like, although the bit when the washing basket falls down on the mouse is actually a huge, gory and very sudden eruption. And so there's a...
Does the mouse die?
Well, yes, all the people. That's how it works.
There it's a metaphorical mouse.
No, I'm just saying it's like Mousetrap in the way in which the deaths happen, you see. Because what you have is all these characters who have to be knocked down like ninepins by fate, death, working its way out through this ludicrous part three of the Final Destination story. But what made it worthwhile was that the manner of their passing was funny. I mean, funny in that kind of, this is really childish, really puerile, I really shouldn't be laughing at this, but I am finding this very entertaining. The death by sunbed sequence will live with me for some time. I mean, I do sometimes think, I've seen everything in horror movies, I've seen all the ways they can do it, but I did think at the end of the death by sunbed sequence, I really feel like standing up and applauding now, particularly at the end. I won't give away the punchline because I always get told off for this, but if you get to the point in the movie when that sequence happens and you don't laugh out loud, then leave, because it isn't going to get any better. But I sat there in the cinema, and I'm 42, and I sat there with Alan Jones, who's a very good friend of mine, who's a very, very well-respected British horror film journalist. And between us, we have a combined age which nudges the century mark, and we giggled like 15-year-olds all the way through. And
so it's a comedy.
It is. It's funny, yeah. It's a macabre, it's a gallows humour, macabre comedy. It knows exactly what it's doing. The guys behind it, James Wong and Glenn Morgan, who are considered by some people to be the real brains behind X-Files and Millennium, are smart. And they're currently working on a remake of Black Christmas, which would be interesting to see whether they make anything of that. It's not a masterpiece, but for what it is, it pushes all the right buttons, and it reminded me what it was like being an adolescent, stupid, acne-ridden kid on his own, obviously, because at that point in my life, I didn't have any friends, much like now. Sitting in a cinema, watching Friday the 13th, watching He Knows You're Alone, watching The Toolbox Murders, before the point that I got bored with it all. It's surprisingly entertaining in a really... I don't feel proud about this. I don't feel proud in telling you that I thought that that movie was much better than Proof, but I really did. I just thought it was much better than Proof.
John in Newcastle, back to your game here. Please give me an Oscar. Please give me an Oscar. Please give me an Oscar. Please give me an Oscar.
Oh, it's
Please
Renee's,
give me an Oscar.
Renee Zellweger in Cold Mountain.
Nope. Although that would work.
Yeah, although the way she does it in Cold Mountain is, please give me an Oscar!
The Last Samurai is the answer.
Oh, but yes, but the funny thing is that he didn't even get nominated, did he? Because the person who got... Didn't Ken Watanabe get nominated?
You're the critic. I read these out.
No, I was just looking to you for, you know, possibly backup support, but... Obviously, I'm on my own.
You are. Andrew says, please pass my congratulations to Mark for not having said you know yet today. And here's a quiz.
Well, I've blown that since he sent it in, because I've just realised I must have said it about 50 times.
Minor makes a discovery. Yummy, smooth and creamy, yoghurt zombies, public outcry, black market.
Minor makes a discovery. Yummy.
Smooth and creamy, yoghurt zombies, public outcry, black market.
Is it one of the Dawn of the Dead?
It's a 1985 horror movie called The Stuff.
No, well,
Andrew
I
says Betty won't get it.
I confess, I haven't seen it. Haven't seen it.
Right, it's 3:25. We're expecting the Prime Minister.
Can I do Lady Vengeance?
I'm sure you can squeeze it in. He's due in 5 minutes, but frankly, this whole thing could drift into the football at 10 to 4, which will be fun.
Okay,
so a mixture of Cup of Nations and the Prime Minister. But hey, that's not my problem. So what else is out?
Lady Vengeance, the third park of, it's Chan Wook Park or Park Chan Wook, depending on how one is feeling. South Korean director. Obviously, there are two different ways of doing the name, and we always referred to him before as Chan Wook Park, but he is now apparently wanting to be referred to as Park Chan Wook. Park being the family name, Chan Wook being the forename, the Christian name.
Yeah. Was he in Park Gosford?
Very good. Ba-bum. Moving on. Park Chan-wook's third part of his revenge trilogy, which started for Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, then Old Boy, which you remember was the film in which Choi Min-sik got to eat an octopus live, and there was a whole big fuss about whether or not that was against the Animals Act and questioned whether or not the octopodi... That's when the whole octopodi thing started, and whether they have vertebrates.
Our disputes of old.
Exactly.
Put them in a book.
Now this, which should have been called Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, I think the original title is... It's something like The Kind Miss Vengeance. The story, very much like the other movies in this trilogy, somebody has been imprisoned for a long time, comes out of prison. In this case, Lady Vengeance has been in prison for 13 years for committing a murder. She comes out, everyone believes that she has been saved by religion and that she's turned her life over to goodness, but in fact she comes out with a far darker purpose, which I think you can guess. Very, very visually stylish. I mean, Park Chan-wook does know how to construct beautiful visuals. One of the things that she says at one point when she's talking about her plan is she says, whatever it is, it must be beautiful. And she has this incredibly ornate gun that looks totally impractical and isn't going to work unless it's very, very close range, but it's very beautiful and very stylish. And she has this manner which is a sort of, if you look, for example, at the acting styles in Memoirs of a Geisha, there is something of that in the manner of the Lady Vengeance character. I think, actually, that Lee Young-ae is very good. I wasn't aware of her before, but apparently she's very, very well known in Asian television circles. But she's very fine, a very low-key acting performance from which, I have to say, Gwyneth Paltrow could take charisma lessons. I mean, if you just look at it, you go, Gwyneth, look, there, that's somebody doing good acting. And you know what? I bet they can say chemistry in their own language. Park Chan-wook says that what this is doing is putting a feminine slant on the vengeance theme, the nihilistic vengeance theme of the first two films. I don't know that that's entirely true. I mean, certainly there are some feminine trappings to the story. The central motif is a mother and child relationship, which to some extent will remind people of Kill Bill. Although the difference, of course, is that Kill Bill was in its total form was twice as long as Lady Vengeance, and this manages to do everything Kill Bill does and then some more in half the time, and it does it much more stylishly and much less ponderously. I don't think that it's necessarily up there with Save the Green Planet or Memories of Murder or Bittersweet Life, which are the other examples of the sort of the new Asian cinema invasion coming out of South Korea, coming out of territories other than just King Kong, which I think are more inventive and in the end more substantial. The thing about Lady Vengeance is it's lovely while you're watching it. It's baffling. It's baroque. I mean, the plotting is completely convoluted to the point that about half an hour in, you're going, where are we? We here? We she in prison? She out of prison? Is this a fantasy sequence? Is it actually happening? But you kind of don't mind because it has a musical structure to it. On a musical note, incidentally, the score keeps trying to turn into the theme from the South Bank show, which is slightly troublesome because you do have
Melvin Bragg.
Imagine Melvin Bragg to come on today to the South
That's
Bank show.
That's another impression.
Did you ever see the South Bank show when Melvin Bragg did do the South Bank show on the Smiths, and he literally said today to the South Bank show, Bodicea and Bar from the Smiths introduced their new album Beat Is Bird. I mean, I was 3 minutes into the program, I couldn't stand up. Anyway,
are there any other impressions that you
know? No, that's it.
That's a relief.
So, it's very stylish, it's very visually lovely to look at, it's violent and nasty and sadistic in a good way. There are a couple of moments that I don't like about it, in which I feel that perhaps there is a sort of sadistic edge to some of this cinema that occasionally you think, argh! It's very, very close to being tasteless in a way which bothers me, but they kind of redeem it. And it's intelligent and it's thoughtful and it's slightly full of itself, but I think this is now it. I think what we now need to see is Park Chan-wook moving on, doing something else, but this is very fine for what it is, and certainly it's the movie of the week.
But just to be clear, violent and sadistic, but in a good way.
In a good way, yes.
I'll need that explained.
OK, so Big Mama's House 2, as opposed to Big Mama's House 1. Blimey, Martin Lawrence back in that unfunny Mrs. Doubtfire act that he did before in Big Mama's House 1. This time, posing hilariously as a large nanny in order to infiltrate a home being investigated by the FBI. So he takes over the house for the kids, and there's a sequence which you've already seen in the trailer in which he pretends to be Bo Derek and runs along a beach being large, and there's a sequence in which he goes to a gym and jumps into a mud pool being large, and this goes on for about 90 minutes and it's rubbish. Worse still, however, are the sanctimonious moments in which our hero gets to deliver some serious lessons in life to the bratty teenage daughter who is growing up and learning about boys and has to be put straight by, let's face it, frankly, Martin Lawrence dressed as a woman. Now, I do think that if this was really the case, what would happen is that the family would take the FBI and everyone else to court for sending a transvestite into their house to lecture the daughter, but nobody ever brings this up. At the end, everyone has a group hug and says, oh, marvellous, you've saved the family, and it's all terrific. So it's the usual rubbish. Guy dresses up as large lady, does all those jokes, lectures somebody in the middle, and then film stops. Frankly, that was what Big Mama's House was like. I don't understand why Big Mama's House 2 exists. It can only be financial. So, moving swiftly on, Chicken Little. New movie from Disney. Digital animation. You know the story of... Do you remember the Chicken Little rhyme?
Except it was Chicken Licking, wasn't it?
Well, it went
around with Turkey Lurking, Fox Locks and Henland, yeah, saying that the sky was going to fall
on
his head.
Was it Chicken Little here or Chicken Licking over...
Chicken Licking here.
Is that right?
That's the way proper children were brought up.
Well, you see, I don't even remember it, but the deal is that Chicken Little thinks the sky is falling in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, no, not falling in, falling on his head.
Falling on his head, because an acorn falls on his head, and then he thinks the sky is falling in. Well, I saw this at the Children's Film Festival with a packed audience of kids, and it's quite short, and the kids laughed occasionally, and you looked at it and you thought, well, looks like a sort of sub-Pixar, nicely done animation with none of the wit. The gag is that the sky really is falling in. At first he's hit by an acorn, but then after that a bit of the sky falls out, and then it turns into War of the Worlds, and which is very strange, because suddenly you get Chicken Little being chased around by tripods. I mean, great big whammo blaster tripods that are blowing up the town, which I did think, did I have a, you know, maybe one too many swift halves in the four? Is this really happening, or am I imagining it? And then it stops, and then it finishes. So it's completely inconsequential, and it makes no sense, and it falls around all over the place, and it's quite nicely animated, but nothing else to say about it.
Just time for Mark Kermode to announce what is the movie of the week.
Movie of the week is Lady Vengeance, Adventures of Greyfriar Bobby, which is about, you know, the dog that sat on its master's grave for ages and ages. He's dull.
And the best half-term movie of the week?
Well, Final Destination 3, for those old enough, and incidentally, I have discovered the answer to your question before. The BBFC, who classified movies when I was a kid, were rubbish. The BBFC completely transformed themselves under Robin Duvall, and that's why one should now pay attention to their classifications, whereas when I was a kid, one shouldn't have.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. All the reviews available online and as a podcast as well, all the details on the BBC website.